Now, I suppose all of you are wondering just what in the world a pole-vaulting preacher is going to say to you. Everywhere I go throughout America, they often kid me about the fact that I'm both a preacher and an athlete. I'm sometimes called a high-flying parson. They sometimes refer to me as a decathlon deacon. I made a trip to India not too long ago, and everywhere I went throughout India, they referred to me as the ricocheting reverend. It's really humorous to get some of the remarks that they make about a preacher in sport. I think the funniest one of all is the one coined by a writer in Cleveland when he claimed that I was the only preacher he knew of trying to get to heaven on his own strength. Well, be that as it may, I've had some wonderful experiences in this world of sport, and I'd like to share some of them with you this afternoon. Now, I'd better warn you in the very beginning, friends, that I'm a decathlon man, and you all know that decathlon men can go on and on and on. They never get tired. Secondly, I'm a Church of the Brethren preacher, and if you know anything about these folks, they're long-winded, and I can't think of anything worse to invite to an occasion of this kind than a preacher who is in shape. I think that's about the worst thing that could happen to anybody. But thirdly, I had the privilege of teaching philosophy for 3 years, and if any of you know anything about philosophy teachers, you all know they can go down deeper, stay longer, and come up with less than anybody else. So you're really in for it. I hope you'll get as comfortable as possible. It's out of these three worlds, primarily, that I'd like to speak to you this afternoon. A little bit of religion, a little bit of a philosophy of light, and a great deal in this wonderful world of sports. Now, I'm going to speak out of a world that I know the best, friends, because in this world of grime and grit and muscle and bone, you can see life. I maintain that this is one of the most beautiful symbolical representations of life there is. This thrilling world of athletics. Men struggling for goals, men hurting, men in pain, but going on for victory. I maintain that what happens on a gridiron is exactly what happens in living. That what takes place on a ball diamond or a track, these are the struggles of life. And so I want to communicate to you out of the world that I know the best, believing that every person here wants to be a champion in one endeavor or another. Everyone's playing the great game, the game of life. And I believe this world of sports can speak to each and every person in this audience. Now, also I believe the sports world can speak to our culture. This may seem like I'm overstretching the sports category, but we live in an age of mediocrity, friends, when people are so prone to throw things together in a slipshod way. I love the sports world because you can't be mediocre. You've got to go beyond the ordinary. You've got to reach out and try to excel. I love the sports world also because in an age of the passive, you've got to get active. Now, we live in a time when people are so prone just to let life mold them. They're so passive. Well, a full-page ad illustrated this thing for me not too long ago. Now, you don't have to exercise yourself. All you do is lay on this machine and it exercises you. I couldn't help but think how that symbolizes the philosophy of our time where we're just letting life mold us. Well, in the sports world, friends, you've got to become active. You've got to take life, so to speak, by the horns. You've got to get out there and run. You've got to do chin-ups, push-ups. You can't just sit around and daydream in a locker room. You can't sit in the stands and criticize. Pretty soon, you've got to go out there and hurt and take that thing, so to speak, in your own hands. You take that quarterback back there. He's catching that long punt. Two big ends are coming down, two big tackles. He doesn't call a committee meeting. That fella's got to take that ball and he's got to move. And may I dare to suggest that this is one of the greatest needs of our time, for thinking people to act. Well, in the sports world, you've got to put your ideas into muscle. You've got to act upon what you know. I love this sports world because in an age of the socialized man, or bureaucratic man, or as the book calls it, organization man, you still get to the individual. We live in a time when people are so prone to forget the individual in terms of gigantic corporations or institutions. Well, in the sport world, that guard can't rely on a tackle to do his job for him. The tackle can't rely on the end. The quarterback can't rely on the fullback or the halfback. Each and every person must do their assigned task. And a team only functions when every individual makes his block or when every individual does what he's supposed to do. That's why in sports they keep track of earned run averages or batting averages or the number of blocks, the number of tackles, because underneath the team, there is a person, an individual functioning. This is a great lesson for us to learn today, that underneath society, there are individuals. And you only change society when individuals live up to their responsibilities. I love this sport world, friends, because in an age of something for nothing, the sports world says you only get out of it what you put into it. We live in a time when people are so prone to try to gamble, to rely on luck, to expect some circumstance in life to change their fortune. Well, in the sports world, friend, you only get out of it what you put into it. The number of hours spent in running, you can only run as long as those lungs are trained to go. You can only jump as high as those muscles will lift you. In other words, you must rely on work, discipline, faith. These things, you can't rely on something for nothing. I'm reminded of the story of the lady who walked in to get a life insurance policy, and she went in and said, I'd like to have $100,000, and he said, well, that'll be so much for the first premium. The lady said, oh, I don't want to pay for it. Just charge it and deduct it from the first claim. Well, many people have this philosophy of life, but if you could be in the sports world, friends, you would see that a man only breaks records as he trains, as he works, as he gives it all that he has. I love it, too, because it's a simple world. It talks about a guy fumbling. It talks about him scoring the touchdown. It talks about a guy hitting the tape in a certain time. It talks about a guy crossing the bar, and you can't make excuses. It's a simple world where the drama of life is being portrayed. Maybe I'm wrong, but I dare to believe this, that the greatest teacher who ever lived spoke in a language so simple that the smallest child could understand him. And yet when you trace out the implications of a thought, they go beyond the deepest comprehension of man. This is wisdom, friends, when you can say something simply, and the sport world does. And in these simple stories, I maintain you can get something about life. Also, it's a world of struggle. And I personally don't believe that a man or woman is prepared for life until they are prepared for knocks and bumps and bruises. Life is not easy. It isn't a bed of roses. The person who will accomplish in life must learn this. You've got to hurt. You've got to go through the sweat and blood and tears, so to speak. Well, the sports world can teach you this. Anyone who's ever gone through a line in football knows what it is to hit a 250-pound lineman. You know what it is to go through 11 men before you reach a goal. You are prepared to face obstacles. Anyone who's ever run a race and really gone out for record knows what it is when those lungs are pounding and there's lactic acid in your muscles and you're tired. Well, that's life, friends. You only understand life when you see it as a struggle. That's why I love the statement of Plato, the great philosopher, who said this: a boy or girl is not prepared for the higher reaches of mathematical inquiry or philosophical speculation until they are first of all toughened in spirit by athletics. I maintain the sport world can prepare a boy or girl for the bumps and bruises of life. That's why the statement on the gridiron at West Point is so significant for me. On these friendly fields of strife are sown the seeds that on other fields and in other days are born the fruits of victory. It's a world of struggle. Well, I'd like to lift out of this world of struggle some simple stories. And my theme is the struggle for life's higher goals, believing that out of this sport world you can see life emerge, you can see life written large. And the first thing I want to say to you is this: if you want to accomplish in sport or in any realm of life, you've got to get a goal, a high one. You've got to keep your eye on that goal, and you've got to follow through with all you've got. Now, this is simple, isn't it? Any of you who've ever participated in sport know the axiom of the sport world: keep your eye on the ball, follow through. Duke Snyder tells me the secret of hitting, you've got to keep your eye on that ball, meet the thing squarely, follow through straight towards those stands. Babe Ditrickson Zaharias in her golf swing worked on two things and two things alone. She would pinpoint the back of that ball. She would meet the thing firmly. And the 6 inches in front of the ball, she would follow through straight towards that pin. Any phenomena in sport can be summarized by these words: keep your eye on the goal, follow through. Aristotle, the great philosopher, said this: man is a goal-seeking animal, and his life only has meaning as he's striving for goals. Jesus put it in a profound way when he said this: if your eye be single, your whole body's full of light. But if your eye be evil, your whole body's full of darkness. I think what he meant is this: if your eye is in focus, if you know where you're going, if you can clearly see life, then your whole body works with you. It's integrated. But if your eye is out of focus,
if there's nothing but a blur or a fog, then your whole body is disintegrated, out of harmony. You're working against yourself. You've got to have something to strive for. You've got to have a goal. I think of one of the greatest football games I've ever seen, the Rose Bowl game. Michigan State was playing against UCLA. The score was 14-14, less than a minute left to play. UCLA took over on their own 48-yard line. They could have won the ball game, but five guys started calling signals in the huddle. The captain, the quarterback, arguing. Offside penalties. Coaching the sidelines. They found themselves on their 1-yard line, forced to kick out. 13 seconds left with 7 seconds left. Michigan State took over on UCLA's 41-yard line. Duffy Doherty called off the bench a young sophomore, put his arm around this kid and said, "Now, Dave, there's 7 seconds left. This is what you've got to do. Clearly determine where those goalposts are. And when you know exactly where they are, keep your eye on that ball, Dave. Move forward and drive that thing straight through those uprights." This sophomore boy, the greatest challenge of his life, went into that ball game. The whole crowd electric with anticipation. The snap of the ball, that kid moved forward, hit that ball dead center, moved straight for those goalposts. I've never seen a kick like it in my life. The ball turned over exactly once, split the uprights, and 10,000 Michigan State rooters landed on top of me. I'll never forget the thing as long as I live. But you get the simple dramatic story. No boy ever kicked a field goal. But what those goalposts were clearly silhouetted in the sea of faces in the background. And but what moved forward with all he had, keeping his eye on that ball, following through straight for that thing. Forgive this personal reference, but when I was a boy of 13, a coach sent me into pole vault. Well, I tied for first at 6'9". Now, that isn't even a good high jump today, and I was using a pole. But a fella gave me a picture of Dutch Warmerdam arcing over the crossbar at 15'8½". Well, I put this picture on my bedroom wall, consciously or unconsciously. Every time I moved into that bedroom, that picture had its impact on my life. It became an image in the back of my mind. That's what I wanted to be. Now, I never made my goal, friends. Came within 2½ inches of it, but I never quite made it. But do you see what that goal meant to my life? It pulled out every ability I had. It gave every step down a runaway, meaning it gave every chin up, every bit of weightlifting, it gave it purpose. You've got to have a goal. You've got to have something to pull you out. In this regard, I think of the greatest story in track and field, covering 4 Olympic Games, of a young boy who wanted to become a champion. Asked his coach how he could. And his coach said, "Well, son, you've got to train hard. You've got to get your knees high." That boy, Charlie Paddock, went on to win an Olympic gold medal. Here's where the story begins. He came back home to America, was giving speeches all over. In one of his audiences, a spinny-legged Negro boy came up and said, "Gee, Mr. Paddock, I'd give anything if I could be a champion like you." Charlie said, "You can." That boy won 4 Olympic gold medals. It was none other than Jesse Owens. Jesse came back to Cleveland, Ohio. Walking down the street, a young boy came up to him, 9 years of age, accolade upon accolade. He asked him for his autograph, and this 9-year-old boy said, "Gee, Mr. Owens, I'd give anything if I could be a champion like you." And Jesse said, "Well, son, you can if you'll work and if you'll keep the dream in your heart." That boy, so skinny they all called him Bones, grew up to tie Jesse Owens' Olympic record in the 100-meter dash in London, England. You watch a thing like that and you begin to realize that dreams can come true, that goals can pull people out. You've got to have a goal, regardless of how tremendous it is. You've got to let that goal pull you out. Now, of course, the hard thing is the follow-through. I saw this dramatically in Helsinki, Finland in the 1952 Olympics. Bob Mathias was on his way to a world record in the decathlon, but in his javelin throw, he just wasn't following through. He was kind of going through the motions, but he wasn't really hitting it with everything he had. Well, his coach and I were up in the stands, and his coach couldn't make him understand that he had to follow through. Well, he wasn't allowed on the field, and his shouts couldn't be heard, so he got an idea. Maybe the crowd would help him. Now, I don't know if you folks realize this, but in Scandinavia, whenever a fellow runs, the whole crowd runs with him. They vicariously identify themselves with the runners. I've listened to a Swede coming off the curve or the crowd as they go, "Hey, you Sveriga, fresh do more. They are they some su senor. Hey, ya, hey, ya, hey, ya." Another crowd would jump up. "Hey, you Sveriga, fresh do more. They are they some su senor. Hey, ya, hey, ya, hey, ya." Well, you watch a guy down there running like mad. "Hail, Sweden, land of our birth. We'll ever be true to thee. Hail, hail, hail." Believe me, if you run, you'll run in a moment like that. I've watched him with those out of peck running. The whole crowd of people, 70,000 of them, all stomping their feet in unison, clapping their hands, going, Zacto Peck, Zacto Peck, Zacto Peck. And you watch this guy down there on the track as he's keeping pace with the chant in the stands. Halfway through, they're going, Zacto Peck, Zacto Peck, Zacto Peck. And the guy's perspiring, but he picks up the pace and holds the chant with the people in the stands. The last lap or so, they're all screaming out, Zatopek, 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 Zatopek. And here's that guy, knees high, tired, worn out, a mask of torture, driving down into the thick. Why, they've driven him to 20 world records. Well, Stan Jackson got the idea. Maybe he could get the stands to help him let Matthias know. So a bunch of us got going, follow through, Bob. Follow through, Bob. And some of these Finns and Norwegians and Danes who couldn't speak English were going, follow through, Bob. Follow through, Bob. Well, to make the story short, the whole stands began to roar at one end. Matthias looked up, got the message. On his next throw, he bent in with everything he had, let that javelin go. The story's anticlimactic from here. Threw it 30 feet farther, went on to break the world's record in the decathlon. You can't just go through the motions. You've got to follow through with all you've got. Here again, forgive this personal reference, but in 20 years of vaulting, since I started as a 13-year-old boy, I've spent 10,000 hours training. You want to be something in life, men, women, you put 10,000 hours of work into it. You want to be a scholar? You want to be great in the athletic world? You want to be a great statesman? A doctor, a lawyer, anything in life? You want to be great in business, in selling? Put 10,000 hours of work into it and see what happens to your life. Here's one of the great axioms of sport. You've got to get a goal. You've got to keep your eye on that goal. And you must follow through with work, with all you've got. Secondly, the sports world says you will be frustrated. Now, I know this is a hard one. We only like to talk about the champion, the fellow who wins the gold medal, the winning team. But the sports world is bigger than newspaper write-ups, friends. It talks about frustration. It talks about boys giving all they've got and they still lose by a point. It talks about men running down to the nub and they still fail. It talks about a baseball pitcher pitching a no-hit game and he's on his way in the 11th inning as a home run goes over his head. There are frustrating moments like this. I think of a guy like Jim Peters running the greatest race of his life. 20 minutes ahead of everyone else, he broke into the stadium in Vancouver, Canada. He had run 26 miles, the marathon, on his way to a world record, but in 95-degree heat, lactic acid in those muscles, just as he made the turn in the roar of the crowd, 385 yards left, he collapsed on the track. He struggled to his feet again, the sigh, the moaning behind him, tried to go on, but couldn't, 16 times fell down when he couldn't get up anymore. This fella crawled on his hands and knees to a white line that he thought was the finish line, collapsed over it, unconscious, 200 yards short of his goal. Now, you can't go up to a kid like that and say, you gotta put out a little bit more. You just can't do it, friends. There are times when a guy puts out everything he's got and he still fails, he still doesn't win. But may I dare to suggest this, that in the striving, in the development of a will that can run down that deep, a man is learning a great lesson about life. That somehow there can be more victory in a striving like that than there is in victory itself. And even beyond that, I'll say this, there can be defeat in victory if a person doesn't learn this something. Now, this may sound strange, but let me illustrate it. Which one of these fellows would you rather be? A 6-foot-4-inch guy that weighed 195 pounds, he could high jump 6'8", broad jump 25 feet, run the 200 meters, I should say. That guy was enormous. He could do anything, fast, big. Would you rather be a boy like that experts claim would break every record, or a kid with a cut foot, cut so badly that every time he ran a race it hurt him? Which one of those would you rather be? Which one of these? An All-American in his junior year at the University of Illinois broke every one of Red Grange records. Or would you rather be a kid 132 pounds, denied a uniform because he was too small and he had a club foot? Which one of those? Which one of these? An Olympic champion with a gold medal in his hand, waving at 100,000 people in victory? Or would you rather be a boy who was supposed to win, wound up fourth, and they lowered the British flag to half-mast? Before you make up your mind, let me tell you about these six boys. The guy with all the ability in the world never made the Olympic team. lost his temper repeatedly, walked off the track, wouldn't even finish a race. Fighting coaches, officials, everyone. The other boy was Rafer Johnson, who went on to set a world's record in the decathlon, even in spite of that cut foot. Today, he's one of the outstanding athletes in the world. The All-American halfback didn't even finish school. Took himself so seriously, thought he couldn't play with his buddies. Dropped out of school, they haven't seen him since. The other boy at 132 pounds, that kid with the club foot, Jack Hackett, went on to make All-State Pennsylvania. Second string All-American, and is down at the University of Florida, molding men. The guy with the Olympic gold medal committed suicide 6 months later. Cornelius Johnson, the 1936 high jump champ. The other boy was Roger Bannister, who the following year became the first man in history to run the mile under 4 minutes. You can't tell me, friends, that there can be victory in defeat and that there can't be defeat in victory. Depending upon the attitude that a man has, it isn't where you are that counts, it's the direction in which you're heading. One of the great things about the sport world is this: it can teach you to take frustration and to come back out of it and go on to victory. Moses never entered the promised land. David never saw the kingdom united. Jesus hung on a cross. And there's no greater symbol of frustration in the world than this one. And yet, out of these frustrations have come the dreams of men. It's a great lesson that you must learn about life. Thirdly, you've got to hang on. You will be frustrated, but you've got to stay in there and battle. You must keep right on going. The sports world is filled with so many beautiful stories of this. I think of one. A boy on his way to becoming All-American. A terrific game one afternoon, and his right leg was practically ruined. Operation after operation on his knee. The All-American hopes were dashed. He would never play football again, or so they said. This guy took up shot putting. Went out one day, watched the guys running around the track, and picked up this 16-pound ball, and with that stiff leg, he began to put that shot a little bit. Fell in love with shot putting. Now, I can't understand how anyone could fall in love with shot putting. But anyway, pole vaulting's a different thing. But this big old guy began to put that shot through the summer. That knee that doctors claimed would never bend began to bend a little bit. And pretty soon it began to bend a little bit more. A month ago, that guy put the shot 65 feet 7 inches. It was Bill Nieder from the University of Kansas. Do you get my point? If you hang on, even by a shred, so to speak, of desire, it's amazing what can happen in your life. I think of two guys I met in New York not long ago, football players. One of them was Andy Robustelli, another, Johnny Unitas. You ought to hear their stories. One of them, Andy Robustelli, dropped from the Rams, wasn't good enough, decided he was going to work harder than ever before. 7 consecutive years later, made all-pro defensive end with the Giants. Johnny Unitas turned down several schools. Couldn't get at him. They didn't want him. Wound up at the University of Louisville. Was about a fifth draft choice for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their fifth string quarterback dropped from the team. They didn't want him. The story of a kid who kept himself in shape when no one knew he existed almost. Coach Weeb Eubank was building a championship team with the Colts. Wrote in a newspaper, "We're going to build a championship team if we can find a quarterback." On a 2-cent postcard, Johnny Unitas sent in, "Give me a chance, coach. I know I can do it if you'll just give me a chance." A 65-cent phone call back. Johnny Unitas was signed 2 years later, was named the outstanding professional football player in the world. You talk about hanging on. Less than a minute left to play the greatest football game ever. Unitas went into the huddle. This is what he said. "Men, we're 3 points behind. It's 17-14. But I'm going to hit Barry with... for so many. Amici's going to go. We're going to hit Lenny Moore. We're going to tie this game, fellas. We'll win in the overtime." The story of a team hanging on as the seconds were ticking away, as they drove down there. Steve Myers put the uprights to tie the game. And then in the overtime, they ripped into the end zone to win the game easily. That's what I mean by hanging on. You've got to stay in there and battle. If you can get beneath the statistics of victory and defeat, friends, you'll discover this. It's hanging on that does it. There can be victory if you'll just stay in there and battle and keep pressing on towards your goal. Lastly, and I close with this, make sure you're reaching out for the greatest there is. And I mean by that more than just world records. I mean more than just profits in business or just in education, although go for that. But I'm talking about something infinitely greater. Reach out for the highest goals there are: God, character, morality. Now, before this seems strange to you to talk about the spiritual world of God out of this world of sport, I wish you could be with me and see that how in the sport world men do pray. I've seen guys in ultimate concern, as Paul Tillich puts it. I've seen them kneel down in Olympic stadiums. The roar, the shouting, the tumult out. I've seen guys kneel down and pray, oh, God, help me do my best. And I've watched guys go off their knees and go out in triumph. I put my hand on the shoulder of Bobby Morrow and say, Bobby, ever pray when you run? This guy who won 3 Olympic gold medals looks up and says, Bob, I've never ran a race in my life. But what I've always asked God to help me. You talk to guys like this. Watch them hit the tape as Charlie Jenkins did, saying, God did it, God did it. Weakening, tired. Watch Ron Delaney go into the tape to beat John Landy. The roar of 102,000 people, the hush. He's kneeling down praying. I've seen this in the sports world. And I've come to believe that it's more than just muscle and bone, you see. That there's a spiritual something that throbs through many of these great athletes. They are what they are on that track, friends, because of what they are in their spirits. Think of a Peter Dawkins. Polio's a boy. Overcomes it through football. West Point Military Academy. One of the 7 top students. He wins the Heisman Trophy, the Maxwell Trophy, every Sunday morning. Leads his buddies into that church to worship and pray. A spiritual something. Bud Wilkinson put it, you show me a boy with a spiritual commitment, and I'll show you a better football player. The discipline of his life will be greater. They'll work harder. Somehow, when a divine dimension touches your life, it makes a difference. I close with this one last story. Lou Little tells it about his greatest football team. They were on their way to the conference championship, one last game. He had a boy in his squad who couldn't quite make the team for 4 straight years. Just before the game, 3 days before, Lou was given a telegram to give to this boy that his only living relative had just died. Well, the boy looked at the telegram and said, Coach, I'll be back for Saturday's game. The morning of the game, he came up to his coach and said, Lou, I want you to put me in this game. I know I haven't made the first team yet, but let me in for this kickoff. I'll prove to you I'm worthy of it. Well, Lou could see he was emotionally disturbed, and he made all kinds of excuses, but finally thought, well, he can't do much harm on the kickoff. I'll put the boy in. The roar of the crowd as the kickoff, the opposing quarterback took it on the goal line, moved up on the 7-yard line. A tremendous tackle. The boy had dropped him in his tracks. On the next play, Lou left him in. He made the next tackle. He was in on the next tackle. You couldn't move him out of there. He made practically every tackle that day. Terrific downfield blocking. He was the reason why Columbia won the championship. Afterwards, all the guys were pounding him on the back. When they were all done, Lou Little went up to him and said, Son, I don't understand it. Today you were an All-American. I've never seen you play like this in 4 straight years. What happened? And the boy looked up at his coach and he said, Well, Coach, you knew my dad died. Did the telegram. He said, You knew he was blind, didn't you? He said, Yes, I've seen you walk him around the campus many times. He said, Coach, today's the first football game my dad ever saw me play. It makes a difference, friends, when those unseen eyes are watching.